First, one person was killed and three wounded at a San Diego synagogue on Saturday, the last day of Passover. Authorities are looking at the suspect's social media posts and investigating whether he's connected to an arson at a nearby mosque. The rabbi of the synagogue, Yisrael Goldstein, told reporters yesterday what he said to his congregation after the attack.
We are a Jewish nation that will stand tall. We will not let anyone or anything take us down. Terrorism like this will not take us down.
The shooting was the latest act of violence against a place of worship, a string that includes bombings of Christian churches in Sri Lanka on Easter, mass shootings at two mosques in New Zealand, and another shooting at a Pittsburgh synagogue last fall. Now, religious centers are trying to strike a balance between being open and inviting and secure. Wayne Thompson is an associate professor of sociology and criminal justice at Carthage College in Kenosha. He specializes in the social dimensions of religion and crime. Wayne, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, we see a lot of these attacks in the news. Wayne, are we seeing an increasing number of acts of violence against congregations?
Unfortunately, Rob, we have seen an increase. It's been noted by the Anti-Defamation League for Jews and also by the FBI. There's an uptick in hate crimes since 2013, mostly due to attacks on religious and racial and ethnic minorities.
We'll get into why that might be in a little bit, Wayne, but I want to talk about how congregations respond as well. And it's a bitter irony. These are places that are supposed to be open. They're community oriented. They're places where people hope to feel safe, and yet they're confronting these issues of safety and security. How do you see congregations from different religious backgrounds trying to struggle with that contradiction?
Well, some congregations are more at risk. Immigrant congregations where people are outside of the mainstream religious traditions are especially targets. They're visible in the community. Sometimes that leads to mistaken identity, as in the attack on the Sikhs in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, just a few years ago. You know, it was interesting, Rob, how that congregation in Oak Creek responded. Mm-hmm. Several people were killed. The guru was killed during the attack. And the response was that lots of folks in the community, other religious faith communities, reached out to the Sikh community in Oak Creek and forged partnerships, friendships. And also the Sikh community looked at becoming more public, you know, more mainstreamed in religious dialogue and with other faith communities in the Milwaukee area. So that was an unintended consequence of a terrible tragedy.
Now, why are we seeing places of worship targeted?
Well,
I think we've lost Wayne Thompson. We'll reconnect with him. Wayne Thompson is an associate professor of sociology and criminal justice at Carthage College in Kenosha. He specializes in the social dimensions of religion and crime. We're looking at acts of violence targeting places of worship. Sadly, it's happened here in Wisconsin, around the United States, and around the world to different religious groups and different denominations, looking at the causes behind that. And we'll talk a little more about how faith organizations respond. A Wisconsin company that provides insurance coverage to many places of worship around the country. We'll hear from them with their perspective on how they help congregations deal with these issues. Now, Wayne, let's talk about why you see places of worship being targeted by people who want to commit these horrible acts of violence.
Sure, Rob. Well, when you dress differently, you look differently, you believe differently, you worship differently, and in a highly concentrated community, often set apart from the mainstream community, it's easy to understand why they would become a target. Also, there are groups that motivate religious violence for religious or political reasons and will identify a clear enemy. So that's a recipe for these violent attacks. There may be psychopathology involved. In other words, there may be, you know, mental or emotional stability on the part of the people doing the attacks, but oftentimes there's a social network, social media, and other kinds of support system motivating this violence.
Do you see a copycat element in some attacks on mosques and synagogues? We've seen people pointing to previous attacks by white nationalists. On the other hand, we also see people referring to the attacks on churches in Sri Lanka as a response to attacks on mosques. Either way, there's a sort of contagion.
Yes. Well, the attack in Sri Lanka is possibly connected to, as you pointed out, to the attack on mosques in March in New Zealand. So there can be that kind of tit-for-tat response. But also just the visibility of these communities and the nature of, you know, being set aside, being different, is going to make them, you know, easy targets in many ways. And plus, with the nature of how religious calendars work, that everybody's coming together at one place at one time in a highly visible way, a good way to get across a kind of identity politics. White nationalism often is the motivation here.
It seems like there's two basic reactions people could have, an us-against-them reaction. They've attacked us. Maybe we need to retaliate or secure ourselves from them. But you also mentioned, after the Sikh temple shooting here in Wisconsin, and this is common around the world after attacks like these, people from different faiths banding together, seeing how they can reach across those boundaries. What makes us go one way or the other?
Well, I think the groups that are religious faith communities that are closer to the mainstream, that are closer to being associated with central institutions in a society, have more vested interest in keeping social peace. Under conditions of cultural pluralism like we have in the United States, that places a kind of heavy burden on the, if you will, the tall steeple churches, the mainline Jewish and Christian organizations that reach out to the more marginalized religious communities. So it depends on, you know, your centrality in the community. Other marginal communities are less likely to respond in this positive way than the mainstream communities that are often united, like ministerial associations. That was an important factor in Milwaukee when there were vehicles already in place for interfaith dialogue in the community. It's just that it hadn't reached the Sikh community until this terrible tragedy happened.
Do you have thoughts on how faith leaders can build those bonds across denominations, across faiths, hopefully before and apart from a tragic incident like the ones we're talking about?
Well, you know, that you could talk about interfaith dialogue is the way that theologians talk about this. And indeed, at the small liberal arts college, Carthage College, where I teach in Kenosha, we had an interfaith dialogue event a few years ago, which was Christian-Muslim dialogue. And so having those kinds of events that are very public, inviting the community, having people meet each other on an equal footing, in situations that are about conflict resolution and about reducing tensions, often have a very positive impact. But you need an infrastructure for doing that. Milwaukee had that infrastructure and was able to take advantage of it.
We're talking about the increase in violence at places of worship around the world. Wayne Thompson is with us, Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Carthage College in Kenosha. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's on your mind as you see these attacks on synagogues, churches, mosques, temples, and other religious centers? Do you worry about this at your own place of worship? And has your house of worship done something or talked about doing something geared toward increasing security? How does that affect the attitude maybe of openness that you wanted to your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the recent string of violence at houses of worship. One person was killed and three injured at a synagogue near San Diego this weekend. Before that, we saw these attacks on Christian churches in Sri Lanka, a mosque in New Zealand. Last fall, a mass shooting at a synagogue in Pittsburgh, shootings at African-American churches in the United States, and more. Wayne Thompson is with us, Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Carthage College in Kenosha. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you think about maybe worry about at your own place of worship? And have you seen more security, something to hopefully head off a threat at the place you worship? Or do you worry that that's going to send a bad message, make your congregation a little less open? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to bring in a new voice to the conversation now. Guy Russ is the Assistant Vice President of Risk Control at Church Mutual, an insurance company for religious centers and other institutions. They're based in Merrill, Wisconsin. He's part of the team that coordinates trainings around the country to help places of worship deal with threats of violence. Guy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yes, thank you, Rob.
Well, it's unfortunate that we have to have these kind of conversations, but when you talk to congregations around the country, what kind of things do you point to when it comes to security?
We try to help them understand that there are things they can do to prevent these acts of violence, as well as if they do occur, to respond to them, with the most important thing being having a plan and then practicing that plan.
So something like we see in schools with the active shooter trainings?
Absolutely. In fact, we partner with an organization called the Alice Training Institute, and they got their start in the school markets.
And are there things congregations can do to watch for warning signs? And it seems like a lot of these attacks, when they happen, they kind of come out of nowhere. But are there things that maybe places of worship should think about to try to anticipate these things?
Yes, actually, the FBI research on these incidents shows that more often than not, the attackers are signaling that they are thinking of committing violence at a particular location. There are services that are available to monitor organizations or the names of organizations through social media and other areas to find out if their organization is being mentioned in some sort of a post that might indicate somebody is thinking about doing violence at their location.
Guy, do you get reactions from faith leaders saying, you know, these kind of things, security trainings, they're kind of contrary to their mission as a peaceful community institution?
It is a tough thing for houses of worship to strike the right balance between being open and welcoming people into their ministries and their missions, but also keeping people safe while they're there. That's part of the purpose of the events that we run, is to help people think through those questions prior to something like this happening.
So if there is a leader of a congregation out there listening, or maybe somebody on a board, what kind of recommendations would you have for them? Hopefully this will never happen where they worship, but what kind of recommendations would you have for them to be prepared now?
Right. Absolutely. The plan is the biggest part of preparing, sitting down and having a conversation in their organization to decide what type of balance they want to strike between being open and being safe, and then constructing a plan consistent with that decision, and then practicing that plan often.
Guy, thanks a lot for taking some time today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rob.
That's Guy Russ, Assistant Vice President of Risk Control at Church Mutual, based in Merrill, Wisconsin. They're a company that insures a lot of institutions, including many religious centers. He was with us to talk about how they advise their clients on how to get ready for and deal with threats of violence. Wayne Thompson, let's bring you back into this now. You've worked with and consulted, I know, with different religious organizations over your career. Is this an issue people want to be thinking about, that they're taking head on right now?
Well, in the sense of being proactive and reaching out and partnering with other faith communities who have been under attack and under siege and showing solidarity, it is indeed a major priority for mainline Protestants. Evangelical Protestants often have spoken out against these kind of violent incidents, but they're not as organized to reach out. They're more insular within their community. So I would say, you know, Catholics, Jews, and mainline Protestants are the ones mostly having these kinds of discussions and doing this reaching out to each other in the communities.
That's an interesting point, because places of worship, they operate very differently from one global hierarchy, bringing all, say, Catholic churches together to what we might think of as a denomination, but each center really calls its own shots, if you will. Are there common rules, do you think, that can apply to such a wide diversity of religious organizations when it comes to thinking about potential violence?
Well, it depends on visibility, types of communities, access, those sorts of things. The safest end of the continuum are probably, you know, rural mainline white churches and homogenous communities, whereas in more culturally pluralistic environments like large cities, where there are more immigrants, more differences, the religious differences themselves become, you know, an object for conflict. And so I would think, you know, urban areas versus rural areas, also regions of the country, you see much less of this kind of violence in small town and rural upper Midwest communities than you would in large population centers in the East and in the South, where there is noted to be more of a culture of violence in general. So where you are in the country and where you are in the urban to rural spectrum makes a big difference in terms of vulnerability.
Talking to Wayne Thompson, Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Carthage College in Kenosha, talking about shootings at places of worship around the country, around the world, how congregations can react to them. You can still join in at 800-642-1234 if this has been an issue at your own place of worship, 800-642-1234. Wayne, let's get back to some of the causes and maybe ways to prevent these acts of violence. You mentioned the social media connections, the outreach from anything from a white supremacist group to a group like ISIS in trying to recruit the next shooter. Are there things that you can see that might be effective at preventing that kind of outreach being successful?
Well, with social media being unregulated the way it is, it's really unlikely that the kinds of social networks that are supportive of intergroup conflict, that is, you know, high tension groups, those kinds of conditions are going to be there on social media. I think that local community, you know, religion's like politics, Rob. It's everything's really local, in a sense. So it really is a matter of reaching out across town, across the racial divides that are clearly evident in churches, in religious groups, and the ethnic divides, and so on. You have to do that on a local level. Here in Kenosha, we have a mosque where the folks there at the mosque felt, you know, very isolated. They started to reach out to the mainstream ministerial associations and so on, and the groups. My church, for instance, Mercine, reached out and were able to go and do like a Islam 101 night over at the mosque. Those kinds of things happen on the local level. It's very difficult to make generalizations because every community is different, relationships are different, and the amount of diversity in the community is a factor.
Now, some research I've seen points to the idea that people who commit acts of violence like this in the name of a religion directed at members of another religion often aren't the people who grew up in the faith or are closely attached to the faith. They might be the recent convert or a disaffected person who's kind of on the fringes. You might not reach them at the mainstream church or the mainstream mosque or whatever it might be. Lone wolf is the word often thrown around. How can we do outreach to people who may not be at the table to begin with?
Yeah, it's very difficult when you have people sitting out in, you know, an isolated trailer out in the country side and you know, connecting to supportive social networks via internet. Then you do have this lone wolf phenomenon that is kind of a North American cultural issue, right? In terms of our way of life. It's kind of like an up goes the garage door, down comes the garage door suburban culture where we're not as well connected. The connections that many of these people do have to right-wing hate groups is kind of tenuous. You know, they're often not deeply integrated into the social networks, but they do get exposed to the ideology and some of the relationships via social media. Very difficult to control because it's so diffuse.
I want to take a long view here, Wayne. Thinking back a few centuries in Europe, the idea that Protestants and Catholics could live within the same borders and not kill each other was absurd. It was a ridiculous idea to many people. Here we are today, not so crazy. As bad as things look right now sometimes between, say, Muslims and Christians, for example, or any throw in whatever groups you want there, do you see reason for hope that in the decades, century to come, we will overcome those differences as we did the Catholic-Protestant divide?
Well, I think indeed that the long arc of history does bend toward tolerance and also religious tolerance. I think about tensions in Northern Ireland when I was growing up in the 1960s and 70s. We've made great strides in that regard. And I often think in this context about Gandhi the leader in India after World War II, who was asked if he's a Hindu, he said, yeah, I'm a Hindu at 8 in the morning. By 10 in the morning, I'm a Muslim and Christian in the afternoon and an atheist when that makes sense. Those kinds of more cosmopolitan worldviews and religious tolerance come with intergroup contact, with urbanization, with the kinds of factors that are demographically driven and inevitable. I think religious tolerance is on the long arc horizon.
As we wrap up, what would you like to hear from political leaders in our nation and others that might help put out some of the fires that that lead to intolerance and ultimately these kinds of attacks on houses of worship?
Well, it's important that religious leaders speak out, and I think we've seen that. Also that political leaders and other kinds of leaders, education and business, speak out across the society condemning religious violence and hatred and hate groups, and having a consistent message. I think President Trump struck a reasonable, chord and set of platitudes and so on when he reacted when he was at the Green Bay rally. But it's important to be consistent about that message and not also provide kind of encouragement for intergroup tensions. So you have to provide a consistent message of peace across politics, religion, and other institutions.
Wayne, thanks a lot for joining us.
It was a pleasure, Rob.
That's Wayne Thompson, Associate Professor of Sociology and Criminal Justice at Carthage College in Kenosha. He specializes in the social dimensions of religion and crime. We talked with him about what's driving the recent violence at places of worship around the world. We also heard from Guy Ross of the insurance company Church Mutual about ways religious institutions can prepare for violent incidents should they happen in the future.